You're listening to Insight here on CAF Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Salmon are one of California's iconic species. These powerful migratory fish meet many of the state's needs, from the fishing industry to providing cultural resources for indigenous communities and playing essential roles in the health of ecosystems. Annual populations of salmon that return to California used to number in the millions, but that population has been in rough shape for decades at just a fraction of historical levels. Dams and levees have blocked off their habitats and restricted their journeys. Climate change has resulted in droughts and increased water temperatures that killed large numbers of eggs and fish. But earlier this year, at the start of the year, really, Governor Gavin Newsom announced a plan to reverse the fish's declining population through a combination of infrastructure improvements, habitat restoration, and partnerships between various groups. It is called California's Salmon Strategy. Here to give us a better sense of what the salmon strategy is and what its effects may be is Carson Jeffries. He is a senior researcher at the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
So I know that you walk in the world of all fish. So you love fish. But if someone's listening to this and they don't understand the impact that salmon and the role that salmon plays in California, what would you like them to know?
I think the big thing that's different about California is that so few people know how many salmon used to be here, and that when you look and drive over the rivers, you don't realize how many salmon used to be there and how they were part of the ecosystem in general, as well as the cultural resources of the people who were here before the European settlement. And that importance is really tough to grasp for people who have never seen them in the wild.
Yeah, and they are a tough species. They're resilient. So the fact that these numbers have dropped so drastically in recent years and decades says something.
Yeah, I think, you know, in some ways, the fact that we still have as many as we do for how much of their habitat we've removed and all the challenges that we've made for them is pretty amazing. And they are very resilient. And I think it gives us some hope that they can be here for the future. And that's what I think is going on with some of the strategies that have been laid out.
What are the major runs of salmon here in California?
So California is unique in that it has four different runs of Chinook salmon, and they're all named by the time that they come in from the ocean and the freshwater, and that we have winter run, we have spring run, we have fall run, and late fall run. And historically, we had salmon in our rivers almost all year long.
Wow. And what are steelhead?
Steelhead are rainbow trout that go to the ocean. So from one group of eggs, some of them can go to the ocean and some of them can stay in freshwater. They're an amazingly plastic fish that can do a lot of different things.
Mm. I remember when I first moved here as a reporter, one of the first stories I covered, it was actually part of the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. There was this report, I think it was like 8 years ago, about the state of salmon in California. It was a very dim outlook on salmon and the impacts. In the years since, there have been initiatives and attempts to revitalize habitat, to restore these populations in a myriad of ways, even through partnerships with some farmers as well. Why are numbers still challenging today? I know, 8 years is a blip, when you're talking about decades, but what have been the biggest challenges?
I think you pointed out well is that it's been a relatively short time to see a change in populations, is that we've been altering their habitat for 150 years. And managing it, and that we shouldn't expect it to change in 8 years. And I think we are just starting to take those steps forward. And this is our long-term strategy. If we don't start now, it's not going to be done in the future. And so for a fish that spends, 2 to 5 years in the ocean, we have only seen really two generations since that report came out. And during that time, we've had exceptional drought. We have had a couple wet years, but we've had some really challenging both times in the freshwater as well as the marine environment has been struggling.
What is the current salmon population in the Central Valley? What does it look like, and how does it compare to previous years?
This last year was really low, with the exception of the McCallumy River, which had their hatchery population came back in large numbers. But the rest of the rivers were really low, and it really opened the eyes of a lot of the resource managers out there in that we have to start taking significant steps to change that direction. With the closure of the fisheries, it has large impacts. And it's just, there's the coastal communities, there's the inland fishing communities, there's the water users. All these people are impacted by the salmon population.
When you say the closing of fisheries, what do you mean?
So last year, there was no commercial or recreational fishing off the California coast, as well as in the rivers. And so all of those commercial and recreational boats that take people out, as well as the guides who do that, as well as just the communities that are supported by selling bait and selling tackle, all of them are impacted by not having salmon populations.
Yeah, it affects the economy and just people's livelihoods.
Yes, it's a big deal.
So people may think, look, last year we had these strong atmospheric rivers. We had a lot of precipitation and snow. This winter, we did a good job as well when it comes to that. So people might think, like, hey, we've had a significant amount of rain and snow in the last couple years. But the salmon, this population that you're talking about, they predate that, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Is that because they do spend between 2 and 5 years in the ocean, is that the fish that came back last year were here in freshwater during the drought of 2021 and 2022 before it got wet again. So because of that lag, is sometimes it's hard to realize the problem that you have right now was the result of something that happened 3 or 4 years ago. And that's this disconnect, and that right now things look really good, but it's hard to realize that what did happen in the past is what's influencing what we're seeing now.
What goes into counting salmon? How do you get an accurate number of their population?
It takes a lot of work from a lot of people, and that lots of folks actually, we go out and do carcass surveys. And so after salmon spawn, they die. And so we're able to go and count all the bodies that are remaining in the river and see how many came back. And so we see that both that and then as well as the fish that return to the hatcheries where we actually get to handle each and every fish. So we get to see, we have a pretty good number of what's happening out there. So our counts are pretty good. Even when the numbers aren't bad, we have a pretty good idea who came back.
Over the years, there have also been, I guess I'd call them like mass casualty events that happens with salmon, whether juveniles or what have you. I believe earlier this year, I mean, there's the first dam removal project in the country is happening in the North Coast, you know, which is along the Pacific Ocean, California, bordering Oregon, and hundreds of thousands of salmon fry. I mean, they died in the Klamath River after being released. What caused this die-off if, you know, one of the problems with not reviving salmon populations is water infrastructure? You're removing the dam, so wouldn't that have been a good thing?
Yeah, and I think that it's you know, the Klamath is the first, I would say it's the largest dam removal in the country, and that it's really what happens is because of the removal of the dam, they actually had to decommission the hatchery that was there before. And what they did is they opened up an old hatchery that was upstream of the dam. And when they are removing the dam, they actually put a hole in the bottom of the dam. And the reason why is so that they could move the sediment that had been captured behind the dam over the past decades. And what happened is because the reservoir hadn't gone all the way down, they knew that they were going to run out of space to hold all the fish that they wanted to have for the repopulation. And so they took a small section of those fish and released them upstream of the dam. And then they ended up going through the tunnel on the bottom of the dam that was exploded to open it up. And they basically got a case of the bends. And so when they went through the pressure and then the pressure was released, they got gas bubble syndrome. And it's basically, you know, what happens when a diver comes up to the surface too quickly. And the reason why is it was a calculated risk, is that they knew they were going to run out of space. And they still have lots of fish in the hatchery that they're going to release as the reservoir comes down. But they made extra fish and knowing that some of them might have to be released in these conditions. So that's different. And that was a management strategy and decisions that were made. Then sometimes when there's other infrastructure failures where there's actually a negative consequence that wasn't planned for, particularly at the adult stage.
Mm. So hundreds of thousands of salmon fry that died. I mean, with your perspective, in the scope of the number that remain, is that a lot of deaths?
It's not really. I mean, it's certainly an impact, but you know, most juvenile salmon die. You know, that's why, you know, a female salmon has 5,000 eggs. Is that most, you need to have two of those fish to come back in that, you know, to maintain your population. And so, you know, there's constantly fish are dying from those, you know, the environmental conditions, predators, you know, there's a lot of things that kill fish on the landscape. And that happens a lot during the juvenile phase. It's really, you know, when we have the fish kills as adults, that's when we really see a big impact because those are the fish that were successful. And that when they go out to the ocean and come back, those are the ones that we really need to work on protecting. And, you know, we see juvenile mortality rates that are significant and it's fairly common. And the Klamath it's concerning, but it's not as big of an impact as it could be, particularly because it was a planned, you know, they made extra fish in the hope that, you know, this might be a possibility.
When getting to solutions, I thought it was pretty surprising at the start of the year when Governor Newsom, his office, they announced California's salmon strategy. Has something like this been done at a state level before?
I don't think there's been the organization. I think that that's the thing that's really hopeful is that, you know, it's bringing everybody to the table with a plan. And that, you know, the strategies that are laid out are really looking at starting this process. And kind of like we talked earlier, is that, you know, we have 150 years of degradation, and we really have to start taking big steps to go forward. If we're going to have a sustainable wild spawning population in the future, is it's going to take a lot of things, from the infrastructure, the hatchery management, the integration of, you know, the tribal communities and other partnerships that we weren't necessarily there in the past. And it's really, you know, it's going to take a lot of people. And this is the beginning, I think, of our next century of salmon management.
What stands out to you about this state plan and how it could potentially benefit salmon?
I think, you know, the first thing in there was the infrastructure side of things, is that, you know, really, you know, the fact that the Klamath dams are coming out, there's work on the Eel right now. We're removing dams in the Eel. And I would even include the levee infrastructure that's in here in the Central Valley. For everybody in the valley, is that, you know, we are protected by a series of flood infrastructure. And incorporating those things like the Yolo Bypass and the Sutter Bypass infrastructure modifications to bring back the habitat that the fish evolved with and that we know they benefit from, and just kind of reimagining how this system can look in the future, knowing that it's not going to look like it did in the past, but how can we make it work with what we have in our present? And how can we reimagine what that habitat will look like in 100 years?
Mm. The plan also calls, I mean, so there's removing water infrastructure, but also restoring salmon habitat. What does that look like?
It's a little bit of both. And I think that, you know, you have to remove some of the infrastructure in the places where you can restore access to historic habitat. And then there's places within the infrastructure where you can restore habitat. You can put spawning gravel in. You can recreate floodplains where fish rear during their outmigration. And so it's a mix of creating access to different habitats, particularly, you know, through the dams and the levee removals and lowerings, as well as within the floodways, creating more beneficial habitats for fish that are using it.
So a floodplain is more beneficial than, say, a river?
They're equally important. I mean, you can't have one without the other, but I think that the floodplain is part of the river, and that it's part, you know, where historically the floodplain was just the next, I would say that the floodplain is at the river. I'd say the channel, maybe, mm-hmm. of the flow of the river. And that when fish are able to leave the channel and access the benefits of the floodplain, is that we see huge benefits for those fish. They grow significantly faster on the floodplain than they do in the river.
Hmm. Some people may feel a little uncomfortable with removing water infrastructure, obviously, because it's used, I mean, to meet a lot of needs, but one is flood protection. So how do you balance the risks to homes and to people with the benefits to salmon?
I think that they are not mutually exclusive. I think that, you know, lots of the work that we're doing with the infrastructure, with the flood infrastructure, is actually maintaining the current, or if not increasing the flood capacity in the system. So we're maintaining flood protection, but we're having it be as a green infrastructure. And I think that's that change from 150 years ago and 100 years ago, is we were just building infrastructure with flood in mind only. And now we're incorporating that same management, but having green infrastructure. So it has an ecosystem benefit for the fish, for the waterfowl, for all these different things that we've realized could fit in the same spot. And this outdated idea of just building a wall next to a river, it doesn't work anymore. And we have to be more creative with how we still provide that flood protection, but also have the ecosystem services that go along with it.
This also reminds me of a conversation we had not too long ago. I mean, the state wants to move forward with building another reservoir, the Sites Reservoir. Would this have an impact on the salmon populations? Because we're talking about removing water infrastructure, but then the state also wants to move forward on building new water infrastructure.
Yeah, and that one's complicated. I think Sites has a potential to be good, and it has a potential to be challenging as well. Is that it really ultimately boils down to the details of how it's operated. And I think in the same way that how we manage our reservoirs now for fish and have an ecosystem-based flow management strategy, is that how we operate sites will be part of this bigger integrated plan. And if it's going to be successful for water management and the ecosystem, is it's going to have to be integrated into that greater ecosystem management plan.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Carson Jeffries from the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences about California's salmon strategy, which aims to revive the salmon population after decades of decline. This strategy also emphasizes what is an important historical necessity and cultural necessity for indigenous lands and those who are indigenous as well as Native American. What role do they play in this strategy?
I think they play a very important role in that. I think it's first recognizing that the indigenous communities of California relied on salmon and was part of their kind of spiritual being. And I know that the work that we're doing with the tribes has been very eye-opening for me as a Western scientist, in that when understanding how the salmon are spiritual, almost like an ancestor of theirs. There's a general connection with those communities, and that it's made me appreciate how I think about them as well, and as a Western scientist, as well as the kind of questioning some of the things and how we handle our fish and thinking of better ways to do it. Is our work with the Winnemem-Wintu in the reintroduction into the McLeod River of Winter Run, we've been questioned about why we do certain things. And I think that those questions make us rethink about how we do them and can we do them better. And we've been changing that. And I think we're changing it for the better. And I think that when we actually come to the table with a different perspective of how we see this resource, we think of it as a resource and they think of it as a real spiritual connection. But when you think about them together, I think that that's going forward is really important. And incorporating those voices into the conversation makes for a more complete conversation. I think it makes for a more sustainable conversation as well.
Yeah, I can see how much you appreciate that just from the tone in your voice and how your face lights up, because it's not just a job for you. It's something that you're passionate about. When did you first have a deep appreciation or even a love for salmon?
I think that I have a love for fish. And it was as a small child. I was allowed to fish with my grandparents and my parents. It was what we always did. And then as I kind of moved into California, I had this greater understanding from my mentors and advisors and kind of really brought that passion into it. And this understanding is that I feel like I learn something new all the time. And I think that salmon are constantly surprising me. And I think that this idea of them being gone is really sad, and that how can we make it to where we can have salmon in the future? So I want my children and, grandchildren to have salmon like I've been able to see.
So given that the strategy is just kind of getting all the right pieces together so people can work together from different agencies, from different parts of life or parts of the state, when do you think, being hopeful, when you will start seeing the effects of this strategy when it comes to hopefully salmon populations going in the right direction, going up?
Yeah, I think this is, like we talked about earlier, this is a long-term strategy, is that we see these ups and downs that happen the wet years and the dry years. So for instance, last year was a wet year. We should expect to see a good recruitment year from that. And I think that what we have to do is we have to think about this in the long term, is we have to hold serve, so to speak, during the dry years. We can't lose ground during the dry years. And we have to make progress during the wet years and making sure we do everything we can in those opportunities as they come and go. Because, there's water resources become scarce during the dry times. But are there times when we can use a little bit of water at the right time? And then in wet years, making sure we just don't screw it up. When we have a lot of fish come back as adults, those are the survivors. Those are the ones that we really need to make sure that they're successful in spawning. And so those are the times when we have to hold serve. Even in dry years, we have to really do that. And then we have to really promote it when we have the wet opportunities that we're seeing now, and kind of see that trajectory change over time is, I think, the goal.
Carson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Carson Jeffries is a senior researcher at the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences, and we've been talking about reviving California's salmon population. Still ahead, we are quickly approaching a phenomenon, a solar eclipse. An eclipse chaser and NASA ambassador joins us with some tips to safely take in the experience. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.